again on his computer screen. The tragedy of the biography he'd been reading scant moments ago, still fresh in his mind, Doc cursed them from within the Armaglass prison.
By the three Kennedys! A plague upon your houses, you white-coated malcontents!
He swung the metal balls with all of his fading strength, even as the mists fell upon him, swirling into his brain.
Jackbooted thugs! Blind, thoughtless cretins! Gibbering jackanapes! Rapists of family members and small children!
As Chan had before, the other people in the gateway control room without safety goggles were forced to turn their heads and look away from the video monitors. Many of them had already done so when Doc's fate became apparent and inescapable. An unworldly humming raced through the chamber, the anteroom, and into the control area of the Matran's gateway. Just when the sound became almost unbearable, Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner was gone in a puff of smoke, vanished in the fog. He was a missing person once more, or more aptly, it was as if he had never existed. Wells strode to the Armaglass chamber through the security of the adjoining anteroom and wrenched open the heavy gateway door. Inside, there was nothing left except the nostril-tickling stench of burnt ozone. The heat from the Matran's unit filtered out and wafted across his body, sending fresh trickles of sweat running down from his armpits. A technician contacted him over the intercom system, her eyes scanning the readouts on the oversized computer console on her observation station.
He's away, Director Wells. We're showing a 98% probability of a successful matter transfer via temporal annex, but have no way of tracking or knowing the exact destination.
Do you think he made it, sir?
I don't care whether he arrives in one piece or not.
Wells wiped the tail of his jacket over his perspiring face as he stepped down from the elevated gateway chamber and into the anteroom. His skin color had taken on an unhealthy purple hue, and his small eyes were crinkled and leering. A crazed look topped by a manic, toothy smile.
So, what was the point, sir?
Peace of mind. And I'll tell you this much. I hope Tanner did make it. Oh, hell yes, I hope he made it, the arrogant son of a bitch. And whatever he is, I hope he's choking on whatever future hell he's trapped in now.
Always the master of understatement, Jack delivered the most precise and telling description of what the group of friends were now facing in the darkness of the rainforest.
Caves.
The albino always used a minimum of words, even fewer than the usually close-mouthed J.B. Dix. Sometimes such abbreviated ways of speaking made conversation with Jack a frustratingly one-sided experience. Other times, the tautness of his verbal expression summed up a situation so perfectly that the florid Doc and his love of language could never conceive of competing. This was one of those occasions. Ryan didn't bother to restate the obvious. The impressive face of the rock wall was a honeycomb of cavern entrances. Dark, womb-like mouths opened wide, and indicating the presence of random holes of varying sizes. JB dug in one of the many pockets lining his leather jacket, and took out a small flashlight he'd liberated from Jamevu's supply room back in El Moro. Thumbing the switch, he used the beam to illuminate the wall and the caverns, darting across the dark openings, spotlighting in a flickering white circle the varied entryways. JB moved the light over the holes one by one for the group's visual perusal.
Plenty to choose from. Take your pick.
Too many.
I am afraid Oliver Yonke is reported to be honeycombed with such caverns. Some are easily seen like these, others less so. This area is a good place to start since there are existing tunnels already in place that were used by the local Indians for hiding, dating all the way back to the time of Christopher Columbus.
Who?
A white man. He came to Puerto Rico like most others, to claim land in the name of his Spanish masters.
Typical white male power fantasy.
Ryan shot Christy a look, and she shrugged.
That's what Mildred always says.
Once they had arrived within the section of Puerto Rico considered to be the rainforest, Jorge had taken time out to explain a bit about the area to the outlanders.
This forest was named for the 3,496-foot-high mountain looming above and in front of them, El Yunque. The forest itself is a rough 28,000-acre stretch of jungles, hills, streams, and waterfalls. 200 species of trees are to be found inside this dank, overgrown area. and Alyunke is almost always wet from the thunderstorms that spring up two or three times a day to violently drench all within. Such abundant rainfall, when combined with the rich soil, is responsible for giving the area lush and exotic greenery. Most of the tunnels only go down and back for about 20 feet before they dead-end. A few of the passages intertwine and connect with others. Those are the ones where it is suspected El Chupacabras make their lair. The legends state they breed here, where there are few people and no interference.
Makes sense. Stay where nobody comes.
Ryan was still not fully sure of the how or why of the queer-looking muties and their hunting habits.
So the question is, why have they been heading out to San Juan? You'd think there would be enough wild game here. It's a bastard long trip to the city.
El Chupacabras are hunters. They have probably expanded their area to find new prey. Besides, a distance of 30 miles is nothing to these creatures. They move quickly, and some of them possess the ability to fly, although only for short distances.
Sure wish you two had some idea of what we're going to find. This could be a wasted trip.
No, Senor Dix. All the evidence we have collected from the old tales, along with what we researched for ourselves, points to this site as the Chupacabras' lair.
Well then, we'd better get looking.
Ryan stepped forward and rubbed the back of his neck. Another one of the sudden rainfalls that had soaked them all was starting to pick up in intensity, and he wanted to go ahead inside and get out of the rain.
Guess we'll start at the far left and work our way down.
Soto's worried expression revealed his own doubts of such a tactic.
Don't you want to split up?
Ryan's eye followed the path revealed by JB's flash.
No, we're in no hurry. Stick together. There's safety in numbers. We check out the caves one by one.
The band of travelers fell into a defensive stance before entering the first of the many black openings. A routine was quickly established. Ryan took the point. Soto, Jorge, Christy, Dean, Jack, and JB made up the rest of the search party. Go in one cave, follow it back, check on any side tunnels, turn, and exit. Soon an hour passed, then another. The similarity of the rocky cleft's interiors began to press on their minds, making each of the caverns interchangeable. When the second hour passed, Ryan's wristchron gave off a soft beep, and he called for a break so they could clear their heads. The one-eyed man stepped over and sat on an outcropping next to Christy. He ran a hand down the back of her soaked red hair.
Hey.
Hey, yourself.
How you feeling?
As good as you.
That lousy, huh?
Afraid so. At least the rain stopped for a little while.
You picking up anything out of the ordinary? Any echoes of the earth power in those caves?
Christy got a focused look in her vibrant green eyes, as if she were peering down a hallway in another place, far, far away.
Nothing in particular. But there is something old and dark and ancient about this place. Like these caves are older than men and will still be here long after we've taken the last train west. Know what I mean?
Right. Place gives you the creeps.
20 minutes later, the pattern began anew. Soto suggested going back a few caves, since the last ones checked might have had a hastier scrutiny than earlier ones when they started. His own weariness, now beaten back, Ryan agreed. If the others felt as refreshed as he now did after a quick break from stumbling around in the darkened caverns, something might very well have been missed earlier through fatigue. It was inside one of the caves being searched for a second time that Ryan found such to be the case.
Wait a minute. JB, get that flashback over here on the wall, to the right.
JB did as his comrade asked, raising the illuminating beam and playing it across the back stone wall, seeking out whatever had alerted Ryan. He patiently moved the beam and revealed a familiar-looking steel doorway framed in dull silver vanadium steel. On the right side of the frame was a keypad display. The doorway embedded in the rock wall was open, the vanadium alloy door itself recessed into the narrow ceiling slot of the reinforced support frame. The familiar and standard entry code numerals were still glowing patiently on the tiny screen, unwiped by the last person who had exited from what was clearly another redoubt.
Black dust.
Gaia's heart.
Dean's eyes squinted at the door.
Dad, is that what I think it is?
Ryan nodded.
This answers one question that's been bothering me about the timing of Jamevu's appearance in San Juan with the return of El Chupacabras. The goatsucker must have come out of the redoubt.
Jamevu knew? He knew!
Christy's crimson hair tightened about her face and neck in an unconscious mirroring of her inner turmoil.
This explains everything.
I know. And we left Doc and Mildred back at the fortress alone with him.
Millie's a big girl. She can take care of herself.
It's not Mildred I'm worried about. She's been leery of Jamais Vu since the beginning. My concern is for Doc.